Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Backcountry in Des Moines, a boutique that believes, as Twain said, travel is fatal to prejudice, bigotry, and narrow-mindedness. Located at 2702 Beaver Avenue, Backcountry curates clothing and gear for people who travel in mind now and in person soon.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. The coronavirus pandemic has made it a difficult time to sell books, an unfortunate time to publish a book, and a wonderful time for many to read. The New York Times bestseller list right now gives us some insight into a hunger for books about race, anti-racism, and social justice, and we are working on a program on Talk of Iowa to explore that canon in a meaningful way. But today is the day for our annual summer books show. We'll talk about the best new books in fiction and nonfiction as selected by some of Iowa's leading independent booksellers. Jan Weissmiller and Tim Budd of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City are here. Hello, Jan.
Hi, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here. Hello, Tim.
Hello, Charity. Good morning.
Wonderful to have both of you. And Jan, what has it been like at the bookstore for the last 4 months?
Well, we've been doing, you know, we've been close to walk-in business, and we're doing curbside pickup and free delivery in the Iowa City area. And we have just had a really hard time keeping up with our orders. People call and they want books. They want books for their children. They want to talk to us. They want some human, you know,
interaction. Yeah.
And of course, you know, in the last month, or not quite a month even, since George Floyd was killed, we've just been inundated with I've never seen anything like it, actually.
Well, that's exciting.
It is exciting.
Has it, curbside delivery is hopping or delivering books and all of that. Does that add up to business as usual? Is it keeping the bookstore strong?
Well, it isn't. Obviously, we aren't doing as much business as we would normally, but we are, I mean, we're maintaining, you know, we're paying our bills and we're paying the employees that we have working. And so we're feeling like this is working for us.
Good, good. And you're staying safe, which is keep the bookstore safe, but also keep you and Tim and everybody else at the bookstore safe. That's incredibly important. I want to say hello also to Kathy Magruder from Page Turner's Books in Indianola. Hello, Kathy.
Hi, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here, Kathy. And how have things been at your store over the last 4 months?
Very much like it's been in Iowa City, only at a little smaller scale. We've just started opening by appointment, and that's been working very well, but we've noticed people are coming in, going directly to what they want, picking it up and leaving. Nobody feels really comfortable browsing and shopping at this point.
Sure, sure. Well, I'm glad things are going okay, and let's dive into talking about some books. And before we talk about brand new books, I know that a lot of you, as you were saying, Jan, people have been calling and just wanting to talk to get some human interaction, but they've also been asking for book recommendations. Now, the landscape has changed a lot over the last 3 weeks because social justice has really been the focus, I think, of what a lot of people are looking for in new books. But before that time, I suspect a lot of people were looking for comforting reads, distracting reads, reads that could transport them or maybe help them get some insight into what's going on right now. And I know you probably all have about 30 or 40 books that fit that bill. But Kathy, can you pick one book that maybe you've been recommending as a comforting read?
Usually, actually, what I do is talk to the customer and try to figure out what constitutes a comfort read for them. One of my personal favorites is A Gentleman in Moscow by Amor Tolles, because it's about a gentleman who is under house arrest in a hotel for 30 years. And, well, that seems to fit very well with our own house arrest at the time.
All right, which will not go on for 30 years, at least.
Let's hope not.
Right. All right, A Gentleman in Moscow. Tim, do you have a book that you've been recommending?
Well, I read a book called Dear Edward by Anne Napolitano, and I read it just shortly after the big lockdown came, so I read it in early March, and I think if it wasn't for the pandemic, this book wouldn't have hit me so hard, but because we were in lockdown and because the death rates were rising and the cases were rising, I found this book incredibly moving. And it is a story of a boy, a 12-year-old boy named Edward, who is the sole survivor of a major plane crash. His parents and his older brother are killed as well. And it really follows him from the ages of 12 to 18 as he comes to terms with coping with grief, how you honor and remember the people in your lives, how you move on. And it is the most beautiful, moving, uplifting, small acts of kindness, 6 degrees of separation kind of book that I think kind of helps give you a philosophy for sort of handling what's going on in the world. And also, you know, gives you hope and knows that things will go on, even though events in life seem so horribly random. I just find it really moving and beautiful, and I would recommend it highly for anyone at this time.
And that ticks two boxes, because not only is that a book of comfort for you, but that's actually one of the new releases as well. It just came out in January.
Right, right.
All right, Dear Edward by Ann Napolitano. So Tim fast-forwarded us there, but great. Oh, no, that's great. So
it kind of is the book that I am sort of touting at the moment for a good shut-in read.
Yeah, I love it. All right, Jan, do you have a comfort read?
Well, you know, I kind of go to poetry for comfort, and I had been sort of in a big Emily Dickinson moment, but right as the pandemic hit, and I do think she is amazing, and I think I think maybe that we don't have another the record of another spirit who felt as intensely as she did. And since we are all you know, going through a moment where we are feeling intensely, it's I think very comforting to read her. I always find it, I mean, comfort is sort of a strange word. It's exhilarating and also comforting, but I decided to talk about a book right now called Joy, 100 Poems, which is edited by Christian Wyman. And obviously he does include Emily Dickinson, but he includes, you know, many poets like the, you know, Osip Mandelstam, who was a victim of the Russian regime, and you know, poets that you wouldn't think of as necessarily joyful. Elizabeth Bishop, who had one of the saddest lives ever, her poem "The Moose" is a very joyful poem. I mean, there's a broad definition of joy here, but you can pick it up. You can just, you know, randomly find a poem, and I think right now they really speak to us.
All right, 100 poems, Joy. So it's a deep exploration of joy, it sounds like.
Very deep, broad, very broad.
All right, edited by Christian Wyman. And that brings us back around to you, Kathy. Why don't we focus on fiction books for right now, but can you give us one of your fiction picks?
Oh, yes, this one's coming out next week. It's The Angel of the Crows by Catherine Addison. It's set in a Victorian England. A doctor comes back from the war in Afghanistan with a leg injury, takes up rooms with the only consulting detective in Great Britain.
This sounds familiar.
Uh-huh. There are people named Moriarty, Lestrade, and Baskerville, giant hounds with glowing red eyes, a troop of irregulars, and it is not that book. In this book, the doctor's named Doyle. The detective is an angel. There are hellhounds, vampires, werewolves, and Jack the Rippers running around murdering unfortunate women in the background. And all I could think of when I read this book was how much fun Catherine Addison was having writing something about what's obviously several of her passions. She's obviously a huge fan of the Sherlock Holmes canon. She's into Jack the Ripper, and she is a terrific writer who had a really, really good time subverting all of your expectations.
This sounds like a great summer read that might just keep you up all night. Is that?
Very much so.
All right. That's The Angel of the Crows by Catherine Addison. And Tim, how about another fiction pick from you?
My second choice would be a book called The Glass Hotel by Emily St. John Mandel. And this is the follow-up to her previous novel, Station 11, which was a fantastic book, and I would recommend it if people do want to read a book about a pandemic. It is really one of the best ones out there, Station 11. But here's her next novel called The Glass Hotel. And The Glass Hotel is a resort luxury hotel in Vancouver that's only accessible by a ferry. And our main character is a gal named Vincent. She was named by her mother, a poet, and named after Edna St. Vincent Millay, and named her Vincent. And she is working at a bartender in this hotel when she meets the owner of the hotel and leaves the bartending job and sort of becomes his, everyone assumes they're husband and wife, but they've never been married. And so she is sort of transported into a world of incredible wealth. Her boyfriend slash, you know, live-in husband or whatever their relationship is called, is involved in a Ponzi scheme. And he's loosely based on the Bernie Madoff character. So really she's an incredible writer, and the book is kind of complicated to put into a 3-minute synopsis. But basically, it is sort of a 6 degrees of separation novel. The main characters are Vincent and her husband slash boyfriend. There's also a shipping magnate who invests in the Ponzi scheme. There is Vincent's half-brother who also works at the hotel and the manager of the hotel. So you kind of follow all these people that were in the hotel on this one specific evening and then follow their lives. But it's really about the meaning of life, making connections, and it has the most fantastic, beautiful ending where people that you've had contacts with reappear in your life and you learn that those what you thought were inconsequential interactions really have given you meaning and meant more to you than you really ever thought. And I love this kind of concept in fiction about how these sort of random encounters or these little bumpings or meetings have ripple effects that follow us throughout our life. She writes so well, and it sounds confusing, but she has a way of kind of structuring all these loose ends into sort of a really wonderful novel about how we are all connected, whether we think we are or not.
Sounds like a very, very satisfying epiphany at the end.
Yeah,
of the book.
There's sentences in this book that will just, peel a chime in your heart. They are just so beautifully manufactured and written that it is a wonderful read.
The Glass Hotel by Emily St. John Mandel. And we are going to take a short break. It's our summer books show today. With me today, I have Jan Weissmiller and Tim Budd of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City, and Kathy Magruder from Page Turner's Books in Indianola. We'll find out more about some of the best new books in a few minutes. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Backcountry in Des Moines, a boutique that believes, as Twain said, travel is fatal to prejudice, bigotry, and narrow-mindedness. Located at 2702 Beaver Avenue, Backcountry curates clothing and gear for people who travel in mind now and in person soon.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today is our summer books show. We've asked some of Iowa's leading independent booksellers to pick some of their favorite best new books. And with me, I have Jan Weissmiller and Tim Budd of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City, Kathy Magruder from Page Turner's Books in Indianola. We're talking about fiction right now. We will move on to nonfiction a little later in the hour. But Jan, it's your turn. Give us a fiction pick.
I'm going to talk about Rodham, Curtis Sittenfeld's new novel based on the life of Hillary, and with the plot twist that she doesn't marry Bill. And I read a reading copy of this pretty much right after the quarantine began, and it was great. I mean, I just couldn't put it down. I was completely distracted, and of course, there is something. There is something quite interesting to think about it. Trajectory that would have allowed Hillary to win the election in 2016. So that was, one sort of upbeat way for me to deal with the immediate moment of the quarantine. But I think, the book has gotten sort of mixed reviews. I loved it. And Frank Bruni of the New York Times loved it. And I thought that she just did an excellent job of, I've read quite a bit of about Hillary's life too, and I read actually another book called Bill and Hillary that's written by a historian that teaches at Duke University, and his focus was just on how their relationship affected his governing. And so from that, I realized, from having read that, I realized how much deep research Curtis had done. And of course, she, as we know, writes very well. She's got a great sense of humor and a great sense of, well, she writes prose really well, and I think that she almost always likes all of her characters. I mean, even in this book, Bill comes across pretty well, even though, you know, Hillary makes the wise choice not to marry him, despite the fact that she loves him deeply, because she doesn't want to be married to someone that can't be faithful. And it's a really close look, again, at the 90s, which feel very far away right now in many ways.
Yes,
I've recommended it to a lot of people, and I've had people buy it and send it to friends all around the country.
Interesting. All right, Rodham by Curtis Sittenfeld. And again, Curtis Sittenfeld has written a couple of novels based on very prominent political figures in America. This is an imagination of what it would have been like if Hillary Rodham had not married Bill Clinton. All right, back around to you, Kathy. What's your next pick?
Oh, my next pick is Network Effect by Martha Wells. It's a science fiction novel. The main character, Murderbot, is a sentient security bot who has hacked its own governor module and prefers to spend most of its time accessing entertainment feeds, watching movies, listening to the radio. It works now for a scientific collective and has been off-planet collecting data, and on the way back to the planet, something abducts Murderbot and one of its human clients. That's a really, really bad idea. Nobody better mess with Murderbot's rather squishy humans. As usual, this is the fifth book by this author. Murderbot is really snarky, introverted. It actually has a "don't hug me" clause in its contract, and emotionally vulnerable, and is much more human than most of the human beings around it. It's a fast, fun, exciting read, and it's also a really, really subtle investigation of what it means to be human.
And I think, Kathy, you have recommended books in this series before. So are you a big fan of the whole series?
Very much so. It's one of those series that is really easy to get people into. And the characters, even though they're not really human, are very relatable.
It sounds like maybe a good family book club novel as well, something that people could really have some deep conversations about.
Very much so. And it's such a light, fun subject that it's easy to get into.
All right.
There is some language.
All right. Noted. That is Network Effect by Martha Wells. It is the fifth book in the Murderbot Diaries. And that brings us back to you, Tim.
The next novel I'd like to push is called The Bear by Andrew Krivak, K-R-I-V-A-K. And this is the only book on my list that's in paperback. It was a paperback original. It's a slim little novel, and it is a story set sometime in the future when a father and his daughter are the last two humans living. You don't know why. You don't know what's happened. But there are signs of decay around them. They live somewhere in the northeast in a cabin and are really – it's interesting that the last two people on Earth lived life as probably the first people on Earth lived. They are hunters and gatherers. And an event happens that puts the girl on her own, and it is through the help of a bear that she meets in the wilderness, and this bear helps guide her back home and helps her survive. And it is sort of it reminded me a lot of Island of the Blue Dolphins a little bit. It is really about this girl, and she and the bear talk. Now, whether the bear is really talking to her or if she's become so in tune with nature that she can hear the bear in her own self is kind of up to the reader to decide. But it is a quiet little novel and it just sings the glory of the natural world and our connection with it, if we just allow ourselves to have one. It's something that I think would be suitable for middle school students on up, you know, through adulthood. It's just a beautiful book about, the natural world and our place in it and a simple life. And I found it a very moving tribute to, you know, just maybe cutting out all the noise and just getting back to the trees and the leaves and the fish and the birds.
All right, that's The Bear by, how did you say Andrew's last name?
Andrew Krivak, I believe. K-R-I-V-A-K, Krivak, Krivak.
Is,
you know, anybody's choice on syllable, you know, emphasis there, I guess.
All right, The Bear sounds fascinating. And Jan, it's your turn again.
Well, I'm going to talk about a John Grisham novel, Camino Winds, and I must admit, this is the first time that
really
I've ever...
I am really surprised to hear that, Jan.
Well, it is true. But he did a Facebook Live event with Kathleen and me, and it was quite interesting to even, you know, even talking to him on Zoom felt personal, and the book, he was doing these with independent booksellers because the narrator, the protagonist in Camino Winds is a bookseller, is this guy named Bruce Cable that has a bookstore on an island off the east coast of Florida, sort of near Jacksonville, and the murder takes place in a hurricane, and the sort of slacker college kid who's working in the bookstore and reads mysteries nonstop is the one who solves the murder. But it was actually very compelling, and I normally never read mysteries, and so maybe it was something to do with the quarantine that, you know, that I wanted something that would completely take my mind off the real world. Although the villain is a person who has found a drug to keep people in nursing homes alive, even though they go blind and get dementia, their hearts remain strong, and so the nursing homes keep getting all this money from the government.
Oh, wow.
So that was, you know, an interesting plot twist, too.
Absolutely. All right. Camino Winds by John Grisham. We'll remember this day when Jan Weissmiller recommended a John Grisham novel. We all, it's really, you know, it's a great reminder that it's good for all of us to read outside of our comfort zone every once in a while. And we could be surprised, right?
Right.
All right, Kathy, back around to you.
Oh, my next book is a mystery, Conviction by Denise Mina. Denise Mina is a Scottish author, and a lot of her mysteries are very hard-boiled, set in Glasgow, sometimes a little hard to understand because of all of the dialogue. But this one is very different. The main character, Anna MacDonald, is living kind of a quiet, normal life with her husband and kids when one day her husband comes in and says, "Sorry, honey, I'm leaving with your best friend," and takes off with the kids. Anna has a really dark, hidden past, and she's trying to figure out what's going on and why. So she and her best friend's husband, who is a fading rock star, take off on this road trip to figure out what's going on and why. And Anna is addicted to podcasts, and she uses the podcasts to not only figure out what's going on, but to figure out where to go next by using the podcasts and the people who listen to the podcasts. It was fun, and it really will take you away.
All right. Conviction by Denise Mina. And Tim, that brings us back to you.
I'm going to bring this book up just because everybody talks about getting back to normal and getting back to the way things were before. And so the next book I'd like to talk about is called Processed Cheese by Stephen Wright, which is a satire on how life was before. And so I think it's kind of worth reading. And like, do we really want to go back to all those things? It is the story of a man named Graveyard. And the funny thing about this book is that Stephen Wright has given all these characters the most evocative names. Graveyard finds a bag of money that falls out of the sky and picks that up, of course, and takes it home. And he and his girlfriend, Ambiance, go on sort of a spending spree. Little does he know that this money was tossed off of a penthouse balcony by the disgruntled wife of a billionaire. And, of course, that billionaire, even though he doesn't need the money, wants the money back. So it is sort of a satire on what wealth does to people, our obsession with material things. It is definitely an R-rated novel. There is a lot of sex, drugs, and rock and roll, but it is very sharp, very funny. They go shopping in the Too Good For You district. They go to a store called Tainted Barrel. So it's just what he's done with the twists on names and kind of our obsession with money and how it changes the lives of Graveyard and his girlfriend. But like any great satire, it goes very south and very dark towards the end. And yeah, I just found it just races along like the speed of light. And Jan's read it as well. And I don't know, Jan, if you want to add anything in there that I'm perhaps leaving out that might be of interest to listeners.
Oh, it's just very funny, and obviously having this, you know, this backstory of this billionaire and you know, you see intricately into that relationship as well as into the Graveyard and Ambiance's relationship, and so it sort of switches back and forth between these two very different.
Well, and it's heartening to hear that it's satire that works. I've found recently that the world is so insane that satire often falls flat. So this must be
beyond. It's a pretty insane book, Charity. Okay. So I will say it matches reality, you know, head to head.
Oh, lovely.
But it is there's deeper moral meanings if you want to go there about income inequality and these sort of things. But at the same time, if you just want to take it at face value, it's just a hoot.
So. All right. Processed Cheese by Stephen Wright. Jan, it is your turn again.
Well, I wanted to talk about a book that came out in February, it isn't exactly brand new, but it's Real Life by Brandon Taylor, and Brandon is a graduate of the Writers' Workshop, and it is the protagonist, Wallace, is an African American graduate student from Alabama who's come to Madison
unnamed clearly
city
Madison,
Midwest,
Wisconsin, yes.
to get a PhD in biochemistry. And it takes place over the course of one long weekend, mostly, although there are flashbacks to other things that have happened in this lab. And the writing is just remarkable. It's so clear and subtle and actually it's quite slow in some ways because it isn't a fast-paced novel but that isn't its point, and its point really is to look at things that happen to this diverse student who's a scholarship student in a very white culture. Both the scientific culture and the northern Midwestern culture are that, and how people don't realize what they're saying, I think. And it's a very, very clear examination of that, and also of other things, of how our past affects our present, and I just really recommend it.
That's Real Life by Brandon Taylor, and he has been a guest on this program, so you can also get some insight from him. But I'll echo that, Jan. I found it to be a really enlightening read, but also challenging, because if you deeply empathize with this character, it's a rough weekend that that he's going through. And I hope that, I mean, that's one of the beauties of reading, is that we get to deeply empathize with characters who may be very unlike ourselves.
Yeah.
All right, that's Real Life by Brandon Taylor, and we'll go back to you, Kathy.
Okay, my next book is just out in paperback. It's This Tender Land by William Kent Kruger. Kent is a very well-known mystery writer, and this is a standalone book. It's historical. It's set in 1932, and the main character is Odie O'Banion, who has been incarcerated in the Lincoln Indian Training School in Minnesota with his brother, Albert. And something really bad happens, and they escape with their best friend and a girl named Emmy, and end up taking off on a raft trip down the Mississippi River in a canoe. And it's about all of the people that they meet on their way. It's a very interesting cross-section of American life. It kind of reminded me a little bit of Huckleberry Finn. But Kent is a beautiful writer, and it's a delight to read something a little bit different from him.
All right, tell us the name again.
This Tender Land.
All right, This Tender Land by William Kent Kruger. And we are going to have to take a break here. We're also going to have to pick up the pace when we get back. I know it's so hard. We can sit and talk about books all day long, but we are finding out about some of the best new books, books that are new releases this hour. I'm talking with three of Iowa's leading independent booksellers, Kathy Magruder from Page Turner's Books in Indianola, Jan Weissmiller and Tim Budd of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City. And of course, all of their selections will also be up on our website later on today. So if you haven't been able to keep track of some of the titles that you're excited about digging into, don't worry. There will be a reference you can get to later, iowapublicradio.org. We will continue our conversation in just a moment. This is Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's our summer books show today. We're finding out about the best new books in fiction and nonfiction with some of Iowa's leading independent booksellers. Jan Weissmiller and Tim Budd of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City are here, along with Kathy Magruder from Page Turner's Books in Indianola. And here's a little bit of math, some radio show math. We are less than halfway through our lists, and we are two-thirds of the way through the show. So we're going to pick up the pace a little bit. Tim, why don't you briefly tell us about your final fiction pick?
The title is called This Is Happiness by an Irish writer named Niall Williams. N-I-A-L-L is his first name. And it's set in the late 50s, early 60s, and it tells the story of a small Irish village that gets electricity, finally, is being wired for electricity. And it is told through the eyes of a man in his 70s who's remembering that summer when he was a 17-year-old, staying with his grandparents in the small village. So it's really an Irish version of Garrison Keillor's Lake Wobegon. It's a lovely look at an Irish, very rural town. The events are blown out of proportion, and for the most part, it is an uneventful life. This book is a little bit like lying in a hammock and reading. There's not a lot of suspense, but there is a lot of charm, a lot of eccentric personalities, and a lot of growing up in the eyes of the 17-year-old. And what makes it so wonderful and balanced is that he can also look through hindsight as the older narrator, remembering what was like 50 years ago, and kind of balances out that youthful naivete with a little bit of, you know, wisdom that he's learned along the way. But it is a charmer of a novel. And talk about escape.
It sounds delightful.
The world will disappear.
All right. This is Happiness by Niall Williams. And Jan, I'm going to let you go two at a time here. But again, quickly, your final two fiction picks.
Oh, well, I have My Dark Vanessa, which is a first novel by Kate Elizabeth Russell, which is sort of a Me Too moment novel, I guess. It's about a woman who's in her 30s and is finally coming to terms with something she's actually been living with most of her life, which is an affair that she began when she was 15 with her prep school teacher. And it's fairly, I guess, subtle in a certain way. I mean, that it doesn't make him just purely evil or her purely the victim. And I think it's actually a very close examination of how these things can happen and what they mean.
All right.
And then I just wanted to talk about a writer, not a book in particular, but a writer that I think has not gotten her due. And her name is Dana Johnson, and she writes novels and short stories. And I came across, when I was cleaning out my house, which most people were doing during the quarantine, a collection of her stories that I had never read, and it's called Break Any Woman Down. She's African-American. Her voice is unbelievable. You will not be able to put these books down. She has another collection of stories called In the Not Quite Dark. They're complicated. They move between race and class, and but they're joyful in a way that that I was talking about with those poems. I mean, where joy comes out of just the spirit, just the spirit living through things that may not be positive, but are being truly felt. Her sense of language is amazing. I really recommend her.
All right.
Dana Johnson.
Dana Johnson. Anything by Dana Johnson.
Well, there's only three things.
Okay. In the Not Quite Dark and Break Any Woman Down were the two that you mentioned.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Great. And then the other pick was My Dark Vanessa by Kate Elizabeth Russell. And Kathy, quickly, you can do two, too.
Okay. Real quick, Beach Read by Emily Henry is two authors on a beachfront, neighboring houses. One's a best-selling romance novelist. The other one is a heavy-duty writer. They hate each other. They get together one night. Both have writer's block, and each agrees to write the other novel. And it's fun. It's funny. It's lightweight. It's a great getaway story.
All right. The definition of a beach read, it sounds like. All right. Beach Read by Emily Henry. And what's your last fiction pick?
It's The Heap by Sean Adams. He's an Iowa author, lives in Des Moines. This is the story. It's a weird story, but it's a lot of fun. A giant 500-story building has collapsed, and a whole community of salvagers has grown up around it. One of the salvagers' brother is inside the building broadcasting on the radio every night, and they call each other, and they get huge ratings. The radio company gets in contact with a brother outside, wants the brother outside to start doing product placements. The brother says no, and suddenly he can't call in anymore, but his voice is still broadcasting out of the building. It's funny and silly, full of conspiracies, evil cartels, kidnapping, et cetera.
Some societal critique as well. I had Sean Adams on this show as well. So again, if you want to hear from the author, you can go back into our archives and listen to that conversation. The Heap by Sean Adams. All right, we are moving on to nonfiction, which is not going to get its due on the program today, but we will do our best. Tim, what's your first nonfiction pick quickly?
James Shapiro has a new book called Shakespeare in a Divided America: What His Plays Tell Us About Our Past and Future. And you don't have to be a Shakespeare buff to enjoy this book, but Mr. Shapiro has taken some key moments in American history and sort of looked at them through the lens of whether politicians were citing Shakespeare to use as examples for their policy points, or whether a production of Shakespeare was going on that riled the city up or different groups, and they use that production as kind of the flashpoint for what was happening politically. It is so interesting and so fascinating, and I just didn't realize how many Americans knew their Shakespeare back in the day when it was taught in all the schools from an early age and when productions were playing on every corner in almost every city. It is just a wonderful insight into the American character by way of the Americans using Shakespeare to kind of illustrate their points. It's fascinating.
Shakespeare in a Divided America by James Shapiro. Jan, what's your first nonfiction pick?
Well, I'm going to do the new Eric Larson book about Churchill, The Splendid and the Vile. And I don't know if Eric Larson is the author of Devil in the White City and the novel about the early part of the Hitler era in Germany in the early 30s in the Garden of the Beast. He's an amazing writer. And this book takes place in 1 year. The very opening, it opens on May 10th of 1940 when Churchill is being made prime minister at the age of 65 and goes through the following May 10th, 1941. So it all takes place before America even enters the war. A lot of it is about his ongoing pressure on Roosevelt to enter the war, because he realizes immediately that that Europe is never going to win the war without America. But it's also, you know, Larson has found journal entries and things that have never been used, that have never been come to light before, to explore Churchill's private life. And it's just a really great book. Mm-hmm. I've never been a Churchill fanatic. I always just felt like I couldn't keep up with all the other Churchill fanatics, but I will say this book drew me in completely.
All right. Maybe you got some catching up done. All right. The Splendid and the Vile by Eric Larson. Kathy, what's your first nonfiction pick?
It comes out July 7th. It's Becoming Duchess Goldblatt by Anonymous. If you're on Twitter, you really ought to be following Duchess Goldblatt. She is an anonymous character created by some major author who was going through a really difficult time some years ago. She lives in the fictional town of Crooked Path, and this book is part memoir and, as the jacket blurb reads, part joyful romp through the fields of imagination. It's the story about how this writer created Duchess Goldblatt and how she became so incredibly popular. She's got something like 250,000 followers. And she is funny. She is kind. One of her latest tweets reads, "As a fictional utopia, Crooked Path doesn't have any police to defund. Much like heaven, this town is run by librarians in sensible shoes who make house calls." It's just, she's delightful, and I just can't wait for this book to come out. I haven't been able to get my hands on a copy, so I haven't read it yet.
All right, so this is,
I can't wait.
You're just very excited. Becoming Duchess Goldblatt by Anonymous. All right, Tim, back to you.
My next book is called The Deviance War: The Homosexual Versus the United States of America. And this is a first book by a man named Eric Cervini, who's a graduate of Harvard and Cambridge. And it really tracks the early years of the gay rights movement in the decade before the Stonewall riot. So we're covering, you know, the late 50s, from like 57, 58 to 68. And in light of the Supreme Court decision today and the fact that it's Gay Pride Month, and because there's so much, the gay movement borrowed so much from the civil rights movement, and in the light of what's happening in the world today, it's kind of a fascinating read about the perseverance and the dignity and, you know, the fortitude it takes to go up against these big institutions to really get things changed. It follows the life of one man named Frank Kimony, who's denied security clearance because of an arrest for loitering in a men's bathroom, and his fight to just get his security clearance because he was an astronomer and wanted to work for NASA. Mm-hmm. But it's a really good history about a part of the gay movement that maybe we've forgotten about. We tend to think of it just happening from Stonewall on, and there was a whole decade of fighting, mostly through the courts, you know, that really kind of started to change the ball in favor of homosexuals in that regard.
All right. The Deviance War, The Homosexual Versus the United States of America by Eric Cervini. And Jan, it's your turn next.
I'm going to do Our Revolution by Honor Moore. It's subtitled A Mother and Daughter at Mid-Century. And Honor Moore is, I guess she mostly does write books about her family. She has a very interesting family. She's also a poet and an essayist. But she wrote a book about her grandmother, who was a painter, and about her father, who was a gay Episcopalian bishop. And, I mean, he was obviously bisexual because she is one of nine children. But this book is about her mother, who died when at the age of 50, when Honor was 27, and her mother was just getting to the point that she was probably going to leave this marriage to the bishop, and it's a very moving book because she's looking at all this writing that her mother had done. Her mother actually had published a book already, but unpublished things, letters, things that she had not finished. And it's very touching. You're reading about this young, beautiful, sort of privileged woman who's making this choice in the war years to marry someone who is not going to make her happy, and how she still has this. Well, they do, obviously. They get involved in civil rights very heavily because of his work with the church, and that affects her, too. But I don't know. I it's hard for me to say why this book is so touching. I think because she's writing about a mother that she really didn't know, who died when she was 27, and then she's looking at her young life through these writings that she was left, her mother left her all of her unfinished writings in her will, and she was afraid to look at them until she was in her 50s.
Wow. All right, that's Our Revolution, A Mother and Daughter at Mid-Century by Honor Moore. Kathy?
My next book is The Catalog of Shipwrecked Books, Christopher Columbus, His Son, and the Quest to Build the World's Greatest Library by Edward Wilson Lee. Hernando Colon was the son of Christopher Columbus. He was a list maker and a book collector. In fact, the author of the book refers to his library as a book hoard. He collected everything at a time when most people just collected the really big, beautiful, special books. And he started a lot of really what we call normal practices in a library, like storing your books vertically, keeping a map of the library, having security so nobody could run off with the books. And when he died, he actually left his estate to the library as opposed to leaving his library to someone else. And it's just a fascinating book about a really unusual man who decided to create the best library in the world.
All right. That sounds like a fascinating read. The Catalog of Shipwrecked Books, Christopher Columbus, His Son, and the Quest to Build the World's Greatest Library by Edward Wilson Lee. And we only have about a minute left, so Tim, you get a bonus book today.
Ooh, wow.
You win the lottery.
I will not waste any time. We've had a lot of people calling about birdwatching books, and David Allen Sibley has a new book called What It's Like to Be a Bird. And this is an oversized volume. Two kids will need to hold on to each side of it, or it's perfect for a parent with a kid in their lap. And it's not a guidebook, but it has wonderful illustrations, and you open it up and, for instance, you'll learn about owls, how they can turn their heads, how does a hummingbird's tongue work, how does a falcon change its shape to swoop down. So it's really just explaining how birds do the things they do and how they're able to do the things they do. So it's really just more trivia about how birds work. It's fascinating. You go spend hours looking at it.
All right. And some of the illustrations are actually life-size, so you're
really
looking at the birds?
Many of them. So you can really see how big these birds are or how tiny they are. Just put your hand up next to them.
All right. What It's Like to Be a Bird by David Allen Sibley. And we are out of time, but thank you all so much for being here. Tim Budd, thank you.
Thanks, Charity.
And Jan Weiss-Miller, thank you so much.
Thank you, Charity.
And Kathy Magruder, thank you for your time today.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for asking me.
Jan Weiss-Miller and Tim Budd of Prairie Lights Bookstore in Iowa City. Kathy Magruder from Page Turner's Books in Indianola. We do have a number of book programming coming up. We're going to talk about the best new kids' books in the near future. We're also working on putting together a show that explores the canon of racial literature and nonfiction, books about social justice and anti-racism as well. And, of course, there's the Talk of Iowa Book Club. You need to be preparing for the July episode of the Talk of Iowa Book Club. We are reading two books. It's a family-friendly show. We're reading Little House on the Prairie by Laura Ingalls Wilder and The Birch Bark House by Louise Erdrich. So please join us. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.